This is Brenda McDaniel being interviewed by Mary Bishop on May 20th, 2006.
So Brenda, you told me that you were...
Came here from Buckley, West Virginia.
And what brought you here?
Roanoke itself brought me here. My husband at the time and I were working in Buckley for the newspapers. And we were working on different shifts, and we just decided that we wanted to simplify our lives. So we looked around for where we might come. And at that time, this was in the mid-70s, and most of the country was going through a recession at that time. But Roanoke was doing well, and we found out historically, usually weathered recessions better than most parts of the country. So we looked for jobs here, but that was kind of hard to do long distance. So we just decided that we would strike out on our own. So we resigned our jobs at the newspaper and moved to Roanoke on the faith that we would find jobs when we got here. And we did. I started working for the Roanoke Magazine and shortly after I got here. And then eventually moved on to other positions. But it really was the beauty of the area. The location, the fact that it was midway between Charlottesville, where my parents lived, and Buckley, where my husband's parents lived. And it just seemed like a great place to live. And I've never regretted it.
And what address is...
I lived at 2245 Windsor Avenue, and I now live at 2037 Carter Road.
And the house that you're in now, well, let's talk about when it was built.
It was built in 1911 or 1913, early 1900s.
What kind of a built house is it?
Four square. Uh-huh. Just a classic four square. Brick down and frame up.
Did you keep a garden there?
I did. I had, we had actually a vegetable patch and a flower garden for a little while. And then I just went to sort of a flower garden, cutting garden kind of thing.
And
then? In 1993. I had become divorced at that time and had met someone else, and we wanted to sort of have a house of our own because after the divorce I had stayed on Windsor Avenue. And so we found a wonderful Tudor on the corner of Carter and Laburnum.
Do you know the history of that house?
It was built in 1923, and I believe it's had maybe six owners prior to us. And the great thing about it is vestiges of those people are still in some of the some places around the house. For example, there are initials and the names of some family members etched into some concrete very discreetly on the in the back of our house in the part where we park our big blue garbage cans. But they're there. And then there's a little place in the garage that also has some initials painted on. But the greatest legacy, I think, is the teenage daughter of the owners who had it before I did, and that was Doug and Judy Pardue. Their daughter made some wonderful graffiti inside her closet in what is now our guest room and was her bedroom. And she had some... initials plus initials and some hearts and various little things that she painted inside the and it looks like she and her friends probably painted these inside the closet, and I chose to leave those and not paint over them, not try to get them off in any way. And a few years after we'd moved in, this girl came back to town to visit us, and she just showed up and asked if she could look through the house. And I said, certainly, and I took her through the house. And when she got to her room and I opened the closet and showed her the graffiti, she was beyond belief. It was a wonderful thing. So I'm really all for leaving as much, as many hints of who lived there previously as before, because that's such an important part of our neighborhood, that it does have a history, and people went there before us, and that's what I love about it.
And again, what's the address of your house?
2037 Carter Road.
And tell me about the yard and the garden.
Of the current house?
Too.
Of the current house?
Mm-hmm.
we were really, really lucky because our yard was beautifully, beautifully landscaped before we came. And the Pardues had done a great job with the house. Eric Fitzpatrick, the noted Roanoke artist, actually helped install the fountain and a little, well, it's just a small little fountain that's attached to the side of the garage. And so that makes that part really special. They planted a lot of hostas. We have huge oak trees in our backyard, so we have a lot of shade. So we have a lot of opportunities for impatience and these wonderful hostas that the Pardues planted. And Pardue was noted for really watering the yard constantly. And I guess it was a real show place when they lived there. And shortly after we moved in, I was outside and somebody walked by and said, "Well, you know, the Pardues really kept up this yard, so, you know, I know you'll do the same." And the pressure was on after that, you know, to be able to do that. And I don't think we've totally succeeded in being as having it as well manicured as the Pardues did, but we tried to keep up our end of the bargain.
And how about your neighbors, your friendships with neighbors?
Great neighbors there. The people who live next door, Helen Simpson, was our house is on a corner, so she was to the right of us. If you're looking at the street, she lived there at the time we moved in, and she was just a wonderful person. Her husband had planted azaleas throughout the yard, and we also have a lot of azaleas, and they're the same color. So I think there must have been some sharing going on there. She was a delightful woman. She was, I think, in her 80s when we moved in. And her husband had died not too long before that. And I remember that one of her favorite expressions was to talk about how she really didn't like living alone. And she would say, "Living alone is just for the birds." And I loved to hear her say that. After she passed away, her son, Ed Simpson, bought the house, and he still lives there at times during the year. His primary residence is in Florida, but he does spend a good bit of the summers here, and he's a great neighbor. It's wonderful to have him here. The Johnstons were the next neighbors, the next house over, and I had the pleasure of knowing the two of them before they passed away. And there's still some neighbors who've lived there for a while, but the great thing about Raleigh Court is that it does welcome new families as well. So we have new families who've moved in to the neighborhood, and so far we've just been very fortunate to continue to get really good people.
And tell me about your community activity.
I was actually involved sort of peripherally in 78, I believe it was, when the Civic League was first formed. And the league was formed as in a response to some threats to the neighborhood, some interest in from developers of tearing down houses and building halfway houses, and we really didn't want to see that happen. So that was kind of the genesis of the Civic League. So I remember meeting with a group of people to talk about forming a Civic League at the little store that at that time in 78 was the Hop In and is now Stop and Go or some such thing at the corner of Brandon and Carter. And that building really has some history too, as I think you probably know. It was called the Dairy Fountain, I think, for a while. So it goes back a good ways. But we just met in the parking lot there and talked about forming a Civic League. And did that, and I was involved for a number of years at the beginning, and then I just sort of fell off, and then the kind of come to Jesus moment for me was when I moved back from Charlotte, because my job with Dominion Bank had disappeared with the merger of First Union, and I was offered a job in Charlotte, and I really wasn't. I had never planned to leave my house on Windsor Avenue or Raleigh Court or Roanoke, but this was a really good offer, and I thought if I didn't take it, I'd be looking over my shoulder my whole life. So I built in a lot of safety nets and took this job in Charlotte and let a friend live in my house. I did not sell it, and I got an apartment in Charlotte. and decided after about a month that I really wanted to be back in Roanoke. And shortly after that, I was actually approached by Hollins University, which offered me a job here. So that was all sort of meant to be. And I took the job with Hollins and moved back to Roanoke, got involved with Dan Wright, and we eventually moved from Windsor over to Carter Road. At about that time, Tony Stavola gave me a call. They were looking for somebody to be the editor of the newsletter, and he knew of my history of writing and editing. So he called, and at that point, I was still sort of kissing the ground of Roanoke because I was so happy to be back. And I probably would have done anything he asked me to do, but the Civic League newsletter was really right up my alley. So I said, yes, I would do that. And from there, kind of progressed through vice president and vice president and president, and then past president. The great thing about the Civic League is that it really does build continuity because it has 2 year, the officers have 2 year terms, and the vice president is generally accepted to be the next president. So you serve 2 years as vice president, 2 years as president, 2 years on the board as past president. So you really do have a lot of continuity, and I think that's a key to the success of the Civic League.
And when were you vice president and president?
I was president from 2000 to 2002, so I guess I would have been vice president 2 years before that. And I can remember that because I was so thrilled to be taking the presidency in the year 2000.
And what changes have you seen in the Civic League and in the
I've seen changes of faces in the Civic League, which is a good thing, and another key to the success, because so many groups do burn out a handful of people and sort of try to keep it with the same group of people who formed it. That has not been the case with the Civic League, so I think that, you know, in fact, new people are continue to come on and breathe new life into it, so I'm very happy about that. As far as the residents, I've seen old people die, and I've seen new families move in, and that's just kind of the course of life. And of course, other than the residents, the village, probably the greatest changes have been in the village and the vitality of that area. And I think also the acceptance that the village is truly a tremendous asset for Raleigh Court. I think there's a lot of pride in that area. And I think the fact that the Grannan Village was also sort of used as a prototype for the Village Center concept in Roanoke as the new comprehensive plan was developed is and should be a great source of pride as well.
Have you been a patron of the library on Grannan Road?
Yes. And I can walk to it, which I think is just great. I wish everybody could walk to school and walk to the library, because it really does give a much greater feeling of neighborhood and community. And whenever you ask somebody what they like best about Raleigh Court, you know, they always put sidewalks right up there, you know, sidewalks and trees and the fact that you can walk the things.
Are there any particular
McVeigh Hardware was the great sorrowful loss that we lost McVeigh Hardware, and that's the one that generally comes to mind as far as losing. I'm delighted with the new tenants. The bookstore, such a wonderful asset. I was so thrilled when Linda Stedman decided to move her shop there, and I just hope she's there forever and ever. And I think the restaurants, of course, Spikes is, you know, a great landmark in our community, and I do believe has the greatest greasy burgers with onions in the world. Seeing the theater revived is certainly a high point. Even though, guiltily, I will say that I'm really not a great movie fan, so I always have this kind of angst that I'm not supporting the Grannan Theater as much as I should be. But you know, I'm probably more of a reader than a theater goer. But if I go to the theater, it's through the Grannan.
How about about community events in down along Brandon Road or anywhere in Raleigh Court?
The block party that we're celebrating today really, I think, has been in a few different places in the neighborhood. I think it was at the Shrine Hill Park area that's now a soccer field. I think it was held there, sort of around the library at one time. I think it was, and I know that in the years that I was involved in being out there on hot, sunny summer days in June, I believe, was the party was held at the Virginia Heights Baptist Church courtyard. And I think the move to the Presbyterian Church is a wonderful one, and the crowds are much larger now, and we don't interfere with the commerce of the merchants on Saturday. So I think everybody's happy with the new location.
Okay.
You know, I really don't. I think it's been called a village. Well, you know, I don't think, actually, come to think of it, I think in the early days that I recall, it was called the merchant area, the Green and Road Merchants area. So, you know, I don't really know when that change was made, but it really did catch on. It certainly does have a village feel, and I think that the enhancements the city has added to it with narrowing the street and putting in the crosswalks and so forth has really done a lot to get that village feel, to bring it, you know, to bring the stores closer to the street, and the addition of some sidewalk eating is great. But I think also that, as I said before, the fact that the city has called it that and made that the prototype for the rest of the city, it's really gelled. I think it always will be.
Do you know anything about the origins of the
name? No. I hope somebody finds that out. I really don't know.
And how about just the general health of the housing stock? And
things are much better now because I will say modestly that it just so happened that under my presidency, some work that had been started long before that came to culminated in about 1,200 properties in Raleigh Court being downzoned, so that they no longer would be in danger of being chopped into apartments. So to me, that's the greatest contribution the Civic League has made to posterity. And because we really, at that point, were about 45% rental, and we were really heading into people buying, you know, all the old houses and making them into apartments. And if this had not been done, then, you know, Raleigh Court, you know, eventually I think would have turned into, you know, maybe something resembling the Patterson Avenue area. So I'm very, very pleased about that. Our houses are old for the most part, certainly those in the core of Raleigh Court. Are old, 75 to 100 years old, as are so many of the houses in Roanoke, and that is a great concern. They're in much better hands if they're owned by people who live in them, as opposed to people who don't live in them and rent them out as cash cows. So, and I think that because we've stemmed the tide of apartments, the apartments that are here are at a premium. This is a desired place to have an apartment. So that really will put the pressure on the existing landlords to keep their property in good shape. So I think we all sort of win, you know, all the way around there, certainly the single owners and the the apartment owners as well.
Now, before you go,
okay, exactly 2 years ago today, on May 20th of 2004, Nelson Harris called me and asked if I would consider being appointed to the Roanoke City Council to replace or to fill out his term. He had served 2 years of his 4-year term as a member of council and was elected mayor. So he would step into the mayorship, and that left 2 years left on his unexpired term. So the council was looking for somebody who was, they were looking for a woman because Linda Wyatt had been, had gone off the council, and this would be the first time in 30-some years that there was no woman on council, and they really didn't want to see that happen. And they wanted someone who was considered sort of apolitical, and I'd never really, you know, associated or affiliated with any party. And I also, they also wanted someone who had been active in the community, and you know, had shown some interest in Roanoke and in communities and so forth. So they thought I sort of fit that bill, and so I thought about it and thought, what a tremendous opportunity. And I had actually been approached before about running for office, but just could never get up the courage to actually campaign. So I said I would do it, and so I was appointed, and I got to serve two wonderful years on council without the agony of having to campaign. during that time, my job at Hollins expanded so that it really, excuse me, it really had been a struggle to do both of those jobs for 2 years. But you know, I got through that in 2 years, but I just wasn't sure I could do it for four more. So I did. I chose not to run for election, and I just had a great time doing that. And at this time, we have the mayor and a member of council both living in the neighborhood, as well as the city attorney and several other people. The head of the Economic Development and Planning Department also lives in Raleigh Court. So Raleigh Court is well represented at City Hall, and I hope that sort of thing continues. But that's just been a great honor. I mean, just something I'm so glad I did, and will always be a great source of pride that I was able to do that and that I was asked to do it.
Anything else you'd like to say about the neighborhood?
It's just, I think we all like to know that we live in a desirable place. It's unfortunate that not everyone can, but for those of us who do, it's a real privilege, I think, to be able to live in a really nice, desirable neighborhood, and one that's always sort of lifted up as a neighborhood that that has done well and has protected itself and preserves the good things about it and really, really watches out. And I really hand it all to the Civic League. So many neighborhood organizations come and go according to what threat is, you know, has risen its head at that time. But the Raleigh Court Civic League has been in continuous active operation since 1978? Am I right on that? I think so. So you know, and I see health in it now, and that's what it's there for, to protect the neighborhood. But it's just a great place to live. There's a great variety. It's becoming a diverse neighborhood, and I think that's a good thing too. As long as all the people live here need to know that they all have a role in preserving it, and you know, you can't just leave it to somebody else, because you know, somebody else might fall asleep at the switch. So everybody needs to be very awake and aware.
Well, thank you so much.
It's fun.